I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The prolific author Naomi Beth Watkin joins me now. She's just published a highly readable, charming book, A Roller Coaster Ride, Thoughts on Aging. It is a collection of essays written with Ms. Watkin's thoughtful style, looking at her own concerns about growing older, as well as tips on how to do it gracefully. She joins me to talk about the book, her observations on being a woman of a certain age. Having passed her 80th birthday, she's gained some knowledge, some expertise, and she shares that in this book. People growing older, whether they're in their 80s or just hitting their 30s, can gain much from this book. Roller coasters might not be for everyone. Then again, growing older isn't for sissies, as Betty Davis once said. Naomi Beth Watkin has written over 30 books. Her essays, haiku, and tanka have appeared in many magazines and anthologies and have been broadcast on the CBC. Among her previous books include one that I liked a great deal, Bookends, A Year Between the Covers. The website for more is at naomiwatkin.com. She joins me from her home on Gabriola Island. This book is published by Poplar Press. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Naomi Watkin. Ms. Watkin, good morning.
And good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
I'm very happy to be joining you.
So how would you like us to read this book? Is this a book that we read cover to cover, or can we just go into to any essay, say one in the middle, and then go back and forward and so on?
Oh, I think you can dip in just where you want. There's no particular logical sequence. Actually, when my publisher asked me to write a book on aging, didn't know the first thing about it, so I read about 50 books and made loads of notes, and then I just threw them up in the air and tore them up, because really all I like doing is, like I did in Bookends, I like writing poetry, I like writing personal essays, and I like telling people about books that I've really enjoyed, and so I just did that with the theme of aging. So I think it's like an anthology. You can dip in where you want.
And in the back of the book, there's a bibliography of these books.
Yes.
that you've read and that you cite throughout the essays in the book. Did you seek those books because you wanted to learn about growing older yourself?
I know it sounds odd, but actually I did.
Yeah.
And some of the books I read because actually my husband is a baby boomer,
mm-hmm.
so he's kind of almost a generation younger. And sometimes I do wonder whether he comes from out of space. So partly I read it because I want to know what's happening with the baby boomers, who are causing a big swell in the number of old people coming up. And partly I just wanted to see what other people felt about growing old and dying, and then I just tore my notes up and wrote whatever came out.
When is it that one thinks about aging? When for you did you start thinking about growing older?
Sorry?
How old were you when you thought about growing older?
Oh, I think I didn't. There's moments when you sort of come up against death. When I was 40, I had a first bout of cancer, and that kind of made me think for a little while, but one forgets so easily, and it wasn't until I had cancer about 10 years ago that I suddenly realized that my body, which I really ignore most of the while, was actually decaying, and that death was somewhere on the horizon. So I would say I've been more conscious of growing old in the last 10 years.
Now, we live in a society, Naomi, where we all seem preoccupied with preventing aging. Do you think that's a good thing?
Oh, it's a waste of energy.
Yeah.
I find it a total waste of energy. All the people I know who try to keep up, keep young, wear lots of makeup, dye their hair, try and be with the in crowd, whoever the in crowd are, and try and keep up with the latest, whatever fashion is going. I gained an awful amount of spare time when I stopped doing all those things. I think if you're living in the present and if you have something really creative you're doing, you're just you, and the aging process goes on around you, but so what?
Is there a point in your life where you found that you had to make peace with the fact that you were, say, in the last act of your life?
Well, someone actually, my publisher asked me, which I was rather startled to me, what I thought about the fact that most of my life was over and I only had a small portion of it left to live. But, you know, I'd never thought of it like that. And because I've become more aware, more conscious of what I'm doing, of what other people are doing, somehow my days seem very rich and fuller. So I don't feel that whatever's left to me is a tiny portion of what I've already lived. It's kind of paradoxical. I know it can only be a few more years left for me, and yet they seem to be very full and very rich at the moment, and I'm assuming it'll go on that way.
Do you find that there are things that scare you, though, about growing older?
On my good days, I can see the whole thing. I was a Buddhist student for a while, and I can see the whole thing as a cycle of coming into being and passing away, and death is just part of that cycle. And I'm very calm, and everything seems, oh, perfectly natural. And other times I wake in the middle of the night absolutely terrified at the thought of disappearing, although I have no idea what the I is, who's going to disappear. Mm-hmm. I've been giving a lot of thought to who is the I, who's going to die. And the more I think about I, the ego, the me, the more I seem to dissolve into just a mess of memories.
One of the things that I found very interesting about this book and made me realize something that I probably didn't realize heretofore, and there is a lot of ageism, a lot of discrimination that people, after they reach a certain age, experience. For you, what's the one thing that you wanted us to get out of this book with regards to how we treat older people?
Well, I think you have to start with yourself. This is where I always believe in life. If you don't give yourself validity, why should anyone else give you validity? I know as I age and as people age, they get pushed to the edge. There's lots of stereotypes, and we tend to fall into it and things. But if the first thing you must do is give yourself validity if you want other people to go on giving you validity. And you must remember that you're probably going to live at least 20 years after retirement age. And you should think about how to make that a very useful, a very enriching time, not just for yourself, but for everybody around you in the community you're living in.
There is that the idea that people have that retirement is just a long vacation.
Oh, you can't do that. Yeah. But you must realize that this extended age is a comparatively recent thing.
Right.
I mean, the fact that we live 20 or 30 years after retirement, that didn't happen 100 years ago, 50 years ago. So it's as if we have to give our lives new markers. We have to look at it more as cycles in our life. We have to take maybe a year off, maybe change professions, maybe think of new professions after you stop the job you've been doing for a long time. Life shouldn't be thought of quite so linearly. One needs a whole new psychology because this, I don't even know what to call the old years, is a whole new phenomena that we have to get used to.
On the idea of discrimination, there's a story that you tell in the book that I thought was interesting. It was quite profound. You were going under for surgery, and the anesthesiologist, I guess, was trying to be cute or clever, and he was discriminating against you, talking to you like you were a child, right?
Well, of course, when you go to a doctor, you do immediately regress. But in this particular case, I was having a mastectomy, and you're introduced to your anesthesiologist, and I asked him what he was using, and he said I was going to be banged over the head. I was just furious, and I told him, I have a degree, and I was all uppity about it. Why don't you tell me what you're using? And then he gave a whole long list of chemicals, none of which I had any idea what they did. And so I was a little embarrassed. And luckily or unluckily, there was a major car smash up and he was moved to another case. But I do think discrimination, one has to be very careful about this. It's so easy to say one is being discriminated against. I'll give you an example from publishing, which is the business I'm in.
Right.
And if there's two writers with equally good manuscripts, and one is a gorgeous young 20-year-old, and the other one is, say, me, wrinkled and in their 80s, and they're equally good manuscripts, the publisher is definitely going to go with the younger one, and that is not age discrimination, because the younger person, it's pure economics, the younger person will have maybe another dozen books in them, whereas I may not even last out my next editing process. So I think discrimination happens. One is pushed to the edge. One is only chosen when there's nobody else to be chosen. One's patted on the head. One's called dearie. These are all minor things. There's much more major things. There's maltreatment of all kinds, economic, physical, sexual. It's really a pretty depressing story to read about what happens to older people who've been really marginalized.
What can someone like me, who's 30, who's just turned 30,
you baby.
After reading your book, what can I say? Be more savvy about when it comes to elder abuse. Reporting it, I think, is that something?
Well, if it's criminal, which of course it can be, then it must be reported. But you know, elder abuse is such a big subject because as people get old, they get grumpy, and their illnesses may be very demanding on a younger person. So you have to look after older parents. And not just that, the person you may have to look after may have led a very unpleasant life and been an unpleasant person. This doesn't justify elder abuse, but it makes it more understandable. So an overworked caregiver can easily just slip over a little, just losing their temper, things like that. It's so difficult. I think the government should have done a lot more about providing caregivers, giving a lot of support to people who are looking after older people in the home. Of course, government never thinks of anything except getting back into Parliament again at elections, but they should have thought of all this 30 years ago. I mean, this was such an obvious thing that was coming up, this big swelling of the older population by the baby boomers. And there's no provisions for Alzheimer's. Well, within 10 years, one in two of us are going to be getting Alzheimer's. So abuse can be mild in the sense that the caregiver is just not relieved, is overworked, overpressed in every way, financially, emotionally, or it can move into actual criminal behavior. And you as a young person, and apparently one in five Canadians know of cases of elder abuse, if it's definitely criminal, you should definitely report it.
When you wrote this book, who did you expect the reader to be? Did you expect?
Oh, I write for a very set market of the savvy women of about 50 plus. I'm not saying that men don't enjoy my book too. So there's intelligent women 50 plus. I also write for a lot of people who say to me afterwards, I feel as though I was having afternoon tea with you. It was so intimate. And I think there's a lot of people out there who want that intimate conversation with an author.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I felt it was a conversation you were having with me, the reader.
I found it more difficult. Usually, like in Bookends, my previous book, it was much more easy to be witty or cynical, as my wit, or mean-spirited, as my twin would call me. But I do find that popping into the world is easier to be witty about than popping out of the world. So this book's slightly more serious than my usual books, although there's moments where I still smile gently when I have to read it.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. As I mentioned, I am 30, and I really enjoyed the book. There's a review online that I Googled on this book, and the woman who wrote it, she says she's about half your age. Are you surprised that people who aren't typically your audience found this book interesting, found it that it resonated with them?
Well, I'm delighted to hear that. And actually, I did get a review consciously from a 30-year-old, because I thought it would be interesting to see what a young person did think of the book. And she gave me a very serious review, and it was quite interesting. She didn't agree with all my views of younger generation, and maybe I'm guilty of ageism in reverse, and that's another thing. Many old people, elder people, whatever word one should be using for us, have a kind of reverse ageism, because our society is so young-oriented that helps our marginalization. We're quite willing to buy products that we see advertised for young people, but of course young people aren't at all interested in wearing the sort of clothes we might choose or the sort of books we might read. But still, when I write, I try to hit a level that is deeper than just the age level. I don't do this consciously, but I'm pleased when I manage to do it, and that is to hit a level at a humanity level where anybody can read that book and find it useful for speaking to their parents, older relatives, you know, even if you are a young person, or even looking at the possibilities that you might feel like saving for your old age, because there may not be a pension there when you do get to whatever age it will be when they're giving you one, which could be 70 by the time you get there.
You mentioned that you have a twin. Does she live close to you, or...?
No, she's actually just the opposite. I live on Gabriola Island, a very rural environment, and she lives in Covent Garden in the middle of London. And when she comes to visit, she has agoraphobia, and we sit and play Scrabble all the while. But she's also a writer. She writes about commercial artists in England. She's an art historian, and I find her stuff quite dull, and she finds my stuff quite flippant. So even though we're 80, we go on scrapping like mad, but secretly we admire each other a lot.
Yeah. Do you wonder what happens to us when we die?
Oh, of course I don't. No, I don't. I don't think anybody does. Someone told me the other day that they knew what happened, and I said to them, be exact. You believe you know. And we had a slight mild discussion about this because they knew. And I must recommend a wonderful book, and I'm afraid I don't know the author. It's called Sum, S-U-M. Mm-hmm. And there's about 20 scenarios of what might happen after you die. And I really like some of them. One is you live your life again in blocks, for example. You sit at the traffic lights for 6 weeks, or you do 3 months of laundry. And I really like that one. And my favorite one in his book, called Sum, is called Quantum, The Quantum Life. You know, after you die, you're living in many, many universes all at once, and everything is happening all at once. And of course, this is totally exhausting you. And so the angel has compassion on you, and she says, okay, we'll slow it down to this. You're going to be locked in a room with the person you love. And I'm not going to tell you what happens with that one, but it's quite funny. So I have no idea at all. I imagine it might be something like before we were born. But as I know very little about that, when I'm in my better moods, it's like a big, exciting adventure I'm going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm just scared.
Yeah, you mentioned your husband Elias. He's a famous sculptor.
Yes.
You mentioned that he's a boomer, so he's younger than you.
Yes.
Not to be prurient, but has that kept you younger, do you think?
Well, I hope I haven't worn him out, because people think we're very much the same age. I don't know if that has kept. I think I was born and never grew up. So I think, like Christopher Robin, who had a very unfortunate childhood, I stayed rather childlike. And that is rather a good formula, actually, for writing, because it gives you an ability to clear see. And, of course, as we do get older and our inhibitions drop away, we do ask naive questions like children. So he was always a wise old man, even when I married him when I was 40 and he was 26.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe I've made him younger.
Yeah.
I don't know. Age is such a funny thing. And also they say when you live with a pet for a long time, you grow like your pet. And I think we've just grown together so that age doesn't seem to come into the question.
Yeah. Now, you'll pardon me for being nosy. How many books do you own?
How many books do I own?
Yeah.
You mean my own library?
Yeah, your own library at home there.
Well, I just had a photo taken this morning for Senior Living magazine, and I'm up against my book. I have a favorite bookshelf, and these are books I'm going to read when I'm old,
right,
because I just adore them. I can't imagine how many books. Not as many as you might think, but probably 1,000 at least.
Yeah.
And many of them are on my favorite shelf is now a very long shelf, and they're books that have really been meaningful in my life and that I just read time and time and time again.
Do you put your own books on the shelf with your favorites?
Well, actually, they're just on the shelf above, and I just like them because my daughter does some of the graphic designs, and Eli, my husband, usually photographs to the publisher for the cover, and they're very colorful, and I have them in little green boxes, and they're all up there. And occasionally when I'm feeling down, you know, authors, no matter how much they write, they always wonder if the next book is going to be any good, or if they can get, although I work every day, write every day, I always wonder what's going to come out. So sometimes when I glance over at that shelf, I'm a little reassured, but not much.
Do you write poetry on the computer, or is that on paper?
No. On the computer, no. I, for creativity, one needs to dream. And although I write on the computer every day from about 7 till 11 in the morning, I spend the afternoon reading and dreaming. And I read all kinds widely, as you know, from bookends, everything from mathematics, physics to gardening, whatever. I just let my mind float, and it's then that ideas for poetry come up, and I jot down little notes or little phrases I might use. And the next morning, when I'm sharp and critical, my brain is working, that's when I'll put them on the machine. So I need that afternoon of dreaming, which I stick to pretty religiously too. It's a lonely life, but it's great.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in the book, the essays, of course, make up the balance of the book. There are also poems that are either in the middle of the essay or at the end of the essay. How did you write an essay, say, that has a poem with it? Did you write the essay first, or did the poem come first? How does that work?
Well, you know, I lived in Japan a couple of years, and I basically wrote a lot of haiku when I came back, and I'm very active in the haiku community. And there's a kind of haiku embedded in prose, which is called haibun, right? And so that whole idea of embedding poetry in prose, I already knew about. It was already in my blood. And I thought, why waste it? You know, if I've got a good poem coming up, for example, the one on pilgrimage at the end, you know, I thought, why not pop them in? And I call it ESPO, E-S-P-O-E. It's a word I've kind of invented. Mm-hmm. And I'm spoiled. Although my publisher asked me to write about aging, which I hadn't thought of doing, and I wanted to please her, I actually always want to go ahead and do exactly what I want. And that is to write poetry and to write essays and to put them together. And I do hope that one enriches the other or expands, enhances in some way.
Are you working on another book now?
I'm doing some essays on art for an American art magazine. My first husband was an artist, and my present husband, Elias Walken, is a sculptor. And I've been doing a series, well, I've been thinking a lot, of course, about creativity and how it arises. And I've been doing these series of essays. I'm a very economical woman, so I'm not going to waste them on a magazine. I'm going to gather them all together, and I think next year I may put them together and do a book on art.
When you look back at your life, what do you know now that you didn't know when you were younger that you would have liked to know?
I would like to have been more aware of children, my children. Like, I would have liked, instead of wanting them to be quiet and successful, I was a terrible, what's called an education mother. I just pushed them along like mad. I would like to have been more gentle in watching them and had more interest in watching their actual growth patterns rather than inflicting on them the growth pattern I wanted them to have, which, of course, my mother inflicted on me, and that's the way the generations go. But it would have been, I would like to have been a little more aware as a human being, but you can't be aware until you're aware, so there's no point in wishing for that. But I do see that it would have been a little more interesting in bringing the family up.
Naomi, as I've said, this is a charming book. It's a lovely book. I'll remember fondly meeting you, reading this book and in this conversation. Congratulations on it. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed your interview, Jesse.
Thank you very much. The book is called A Roller Coaster Ride, Thoughts on Aging. It's published by Poplar Press. The website for more, naomiwalken.com. Naomi Walken, the author, on the line from Gabriole Island in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.